Hello, everybody. Welcome to Flaherty's on Films. We're talking about Back to the Future.
Hit the music.
Steven Spielberg presents Back to the Future, a Robert Zemeckis film. Marty leads an ordinary life.
No McFly ever amounted to anything in the history of Hill Valley.
Well, history is going to change.
And 1985 is not his year. But Dr. Brown is about to change all that.
Are you telling me that you built a time machine?
Hey, everybody, I'm Michael.
And I'm Colleen Flaherty. Isn't that a great song? I actually really like the Back to the Future theme. I think it's so perfect. Michael's face makes you think he does not live.
No, I mean, usually we just play the trailer, so it's not necessarily the song.
It has the song in the trailer, doesn't it? Do I need to do it again?
Not all the time.
Play the goddamn song.
I'm Michael Flaherty.
I'm Colleen Flaherty.
This is a podcast where we talk about the AFI's 100 movies, except the AFI we're doing is a fan-made one where they have requested movies, and this film they requested this week is Back to the Future.
And boy, was it popular, nominated by three different people.
Yeah.
Justin Kessler, co-worker of mine, Christina Flaherty, and Matt Egger, also a co-worker of mine.
Nice.
Well, Michael, why don't you tell them what's it about, and I'll tell you why these people nominated it.
Sure. Here's a description from somewhere. Marty McFly, a 17-year-old high school student, is accidentally sent 30 years into the past in a time-traveling DeLorean invented by his close friend, the maverick scientist Doc Brown.
All right. I have a really important question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Michael J. Fox. Fox? No.
Nope, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. No question.
I just think he's so adorable.
You can be adorable in a fox.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So, I forgot to ask Justin until Friday, and then he had to go. He was out fishing. So, sorry, Justin. We're not going to know your reasons. But, Christina, I messaged her on Facebook.
We have a whole thing.
So, do you want to tell us what Christina said?
Sure.
I'll try to do a Christina voice.
Well, I'm not going to do that. Looking at the AFI criteria, I simply think it meets all the criteria. Feature length, check. Popularity over time, check for sure. People still know what it is, even if they haven't seen it. It's funny, it's clever, it's rewatchable, it's a classic. Historical significance, check. They lived through 2015 before we did. How interesting to compare what 2015 was really like to how it was in the movie. And cultural impact, check, check. Hoverboards. As for critical reception and major award winner, I purposely skipped those because I don't have any info on those. Not that it really stops us.
Thanks, Christina. And now we're going to hear from Matt. And I really, really apologize for the quality of the recording because he has a great radio voice. But so Matt and I got to talking. He said he threw some movies out there on the Facebook and he didn't really think it through because he's like, well, maybe Father of the Bride doesn't really belong in the AFI.
Hmm.
But in rethinking his choices, he's like, Back to the Future definitely belongs on here. So here's what he had to say.
All right, Matt, tell me why you like Back to the Future.
I just think it's one of the best crafted, you know, end to end. There's really not a weak spot to it. It spawned a whole series, and it's one of those films that I think has kind of, you know, become part of all our culture. And so, you know, for all these reasons, you got Michael J. Fox, you got, you know, like the Doc, you know, there's no downside to the film. And so, yeah, if some of these other, you know, boring slog that you guys had to watch are on the list, why not Back to the Future?
Right. I do think, like, 2001 Space Odyssey would have been better if Huey Lewis and the News did the soundtrack.
It would have been a real improvement, yeah. More horns.
When did you watch it first?
It's kind of, you know, because we're probably about the same age, and, you know, we were probably pretty young when it came out, and so I don't remember even first watching it. It was just kind of always there, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, sure, I've seen, like, bits of that.
Yeah, I think I saw the third one in the theaters, but I presume that I would have been too young to really be, you know,
probably.
Of theater-going age when at least the first two came out.
Let's see. It came out 1985.
Yeah, so I would have been one. So yeah. Maybe I was going to the films, but I wasn't paying much attention to them.
Yeah, those are pretty good reasons.
And thank you, Matt.
Thank you, Matt. That was great.
Why don't we go to our first and fan favorite segment?
Bam.
Time for Sam. This is the part of the show where Sam comes on and tells us some facts about Back to the Future.
While visiting his parents, Bob Gale discovered his father's high school yearbook and found out his dad had been the president of his graduating class. Realizing that he couldn't even remember who was the president of his own graduating class, Gale started wondering if he would have been friends with his dad if they had gone to school together.
Aww.
He would bring this idea to his friend Robert Zemeckis, And together, they would approach Columbia Pictures, where they would get a development deal and would write the first draft for Back to the Future.
Would you guys be friends with your parents?
Oh, totally. Hang with Diane and Mike.
Diane would have been way too cool for me, because I was a real nerd. She got kicked out the cheerleading squad for smoking.
Yeah, she's so
or
cool.
Or drinking or something.
You know, when we first watched this movie and this fact came up, I said, I don't think I would have been friends with my dad. I think he would have been kind of too cool as well. But Diane said that my dad was a huge theater nerd, so I do think we would have gotten along.
Cute.
After the script was finished, the two Bobs would shop Back to the Future to different studios. Over the next 2 years, it would be rejected over 40 times from every major studio.
Damn.
I mean, that makes sense. It's a weird-ass premise.
So some studios found that it was not risque enough. They wanted, like, the students and the high school vibe kind of at that time was to be more risque. Kind of think of, like, American Graffiti. A little more scandalous.
Hmm.
However, Disney refused to make the movie because it showed incest, which obviously they didn't mind when they had Luke and Leia, just saying.
Great disqualifier.
So
I don't think Disney made Star Wars.
They just own it.
They do now.
They own it.
Okay.
Yeah, Khalid.
Thanks, Mike.
Finally, they would find their yes with Spielberg and his production company. The next problem was Columbia owned the script.
Why would Spielberg be the 40th person you pitched to?
So actually, it's a whole story. Spielberg had produced two of their films already that were both flops.
Oh.
And so Spielberg read the script and was like, yeah, sure, buddies. But they felt like they were going to be perceived as they could only make it in Hollywood because their friend Spielberg produces all of their crappy films.
Hmm.
But then one of them directed Romancing the Stone, which was a hit. And then they were like, okay.
Cool.
So that's the little backstory.
That's a good story.
Okay. So the next problem was Columbia had the script and they did not want to produce it or make it. So Columbia was having their own legal issues at the time as they were trying to make a comedy that's plot was a little too similar to one, Double Indemnity.
Oh.
That was my fun.
I love that fact.
To get their movie made, they would need permission from Universal, who owned the rights to Double Indemnity. In a lucky coincidence. This word has been giving me trouble all morning. I can't even tell you. The Universal executive who they were working with had come from Columbia, and he remembered the script to Back to the Future. So he agreed to trade the Double Indemnity license in exchange for the Back to the Future script.
Mm.
In case you're wondering, I think it's called Big Trouble, and it's the Double Indemnity comedy.
Oh, fun.
Okay.
It looks horrible.
Got it.
So now there's a production company and a studio, but there was still some hesitation. A studio head sent an email to the Bobs stating that the name Back to the Future was too confusing. He also felt that any movie with the word future in it would be ignored in the box office. He suggested they change the title to Spaceman from Pluto.
Stupid.
Mm.
The Bobs didn't know how to politely respond to this email, so they asked Steven Spielberg what he thought to do, and Spielberg responded to the email by thanking the executive for his jokes and saying, oh, the entire crew got a real kick out of it, so that he was too embarrassed to say, no, that's really what I meant.
What was it about future? Like,
they thought time travel was not the vibe, but space was really big.
People look at the marquee, Back to the Future. Oh, never mind.
Back to. Intrigued.
Okay.
Future.
Oh, yeah.
No, thank
you. We're going to go to the Pluto movie.
The executive head did get one thing changed in the film. However, Doc originally had a pet chimpanzee. He would go on to say, I looked it up. No movie with a chimpanzee has ever made any money. And with that, Doc's chimp would be replaced with his dog, Einstein.
Interesting.
Good logic.
With casting, the first choice to play the lovable Marty was Michael J. Fox. However, Fox was filming his TV show, Family Ties, and his coworker, Meredith Baxter, was on maternity leave. So he was carrying more of the show than he usually would. So the Bobs cast Eric Stoltz based on his performance in The Mask. Mm-hmm. They started filming, and after 6 weeks, it became clear that Stoltz was not right for the part.
Aww.
He was
guy.
Oh, wait. He was too brooding and dark about the lighthearted comedy. Plus, he was like really into being a method actor.
Ugh.
So he demanded that everyone on the set call him Marty McFly. Oh, and man. There was a lot of attentions because he actually insisted on punching Thomas Wilson in the Biff Marty fight scene. So maybe it's okay.
Yeah.
After 6 weeks of filming, it was determined he was wrong and the role needed to be recast.
Okay, I'm just like picturing a really serious actor saying like, Doc, are you saying my mom has the hots for me?
Like I've got to go to school.
So here's the great part. When Christopher Lloyd was told that Stoltz was being replaced, he responded with, who's Eric? And then when it was explained to him, he exclaimed, oh, I really thought his name was Marty. Reshooting all of Stoltz's scenes would cost the film $3 million. Aww. So it was like a big decision, but they were like, it's just not going to work with
poor
this guy.
Poor Eric.
He was okay with it. He understood that he was miscasting.
Well, maybe at the time, but surely afterward.
Now the time had passed and Meredith Baxter was back from her maternity leave. The Family Tie producers decided Fox could do both Future and his show. For 3 months, Fox would work on both projects, and from his autobiography, Fox described this time as, a Teamster driver would pick me up at 9:30 a.m. and take me to Paramount, where I would spend the day rehearsing this week's shows, coming to a run-through at approximately 5 p.m. each afternoon. Then at 6, another Teamster driver would pick me up and shuttle me to Universal Studios, or whatever far-flung location we were based that evening, where I would work on Back to the Future until just before sunrise. At that point, I'd climb back into the car production van with a pillow and a blanket, and yet another driver would take me home again, sometimes literally carrying me into my apartment and dropping me into my bed. I'd catch 2 to 3 hours of sleep before Teamster driver number one would reappear at my apartment. He let himself in with a key I'd provided, brew a pot of coffee, turn on the shower, and then rouse me to start the whole process all over again. Most of Back to the Future was shot at night, and then the scenes that were outside during the day were shot in the weekends.
Poor guy.
Wow.
Now that we have our iconic Marty, let's talk about another iconic performance, the DeLorean. When the Bobs were writing the script, they originally pictured a refrigerator as the time machine. However, they were fearful that kids would be inspired by the film to lock themselves into fridges. They also liked the idea of having the machine being mobile and a bit sexier than a refrigerator.
Nothing is sexier than a DeLorean. Yeah.
They would settle in a DeLorean as its general appearance and gull wing doors gave it a spacecraft vibe.
Question. How do you park a DeLorean?
With the doors?
Yeah. Wouldn't you just hit the other cars on either side of you?
That's why they went out of fashion.
Perhaps.
However, hold on. The car company was coming off of some really bad press, something about a $24 million cocaine deal. So they were very grateful for the endorsement, and the owner of it, the DeLorean company, wrote a thank you letter to Bob Gale for, quote, keeping my dream alive.
Oh.
Once filming began, the Universal Product Placement Team, which I did not know was a thing, but is awesome, received an offer for $75,000 from Ford to switch the time machine to a Mustang. Bob Gale would respond to the offer, Doc Brown doesn't drive a fucking Mustang. After the film was released, DeLorean released a body kit to turn your own DeLorean into a time machine.
Wow.
For the record, the magical refrigerator wasn't completely forgotten. Steven Spielberg found it hilarious and would use it mockingly to save Indiana Jones in the Crystal Skull film.
That's actually what I thought of.
Hell yeah, nice.
Made no sense.
There is a fun little cameo in this film. Ooh. If you guys did not catch it, Huey Lewis and the News.
Oh, yes, I did. I totally did.
Provided the hit songs for this film. And Huey himself, Lewis, is in this film. He plays the teacher who criticizes Marty's band as being too darn loud.
He like does it a little mic, like, you're too darn loud. It's so cute.
Due to the recasting delays, the scheduled release date was fast approaching. For post-productions, editors worked 24-hour shifts. Unusual for a major movie release, the time between film wrapping and the premiere was only 9.5 weeks. Once released, it would become the biggest grossing film of 1985, making $210 million in the box office in America.
Wow.
Back to the Future would be nominated for 4 Academy Awards. It would win one. It was nominated for, but did not win, Original Screenplay, Best Sound Mixing, Best Original Song for The Power of Love.
Oh.
It would win Best Sound Effects Editing.
Robbed.
And although this film was kept off of the AFI Top 100 Films list, it did make the Top 10 Science Fiction Film list. So, your question of the week is, where on the AFI Top 10 Science Fiction list does Back to the Future land?
Okay, I got it.
I got mine.
3.
Oh, so I said 2.
10.
Oh, damn. You got me.
A few more facts about this film. The studio had to get permission from the White House to make a joke about Reagan as president. Not only did he give his permission for the joke, but while viewing the film, Reagan laughed so hard after the joke, he had the projectionist stop the film and replay the scene so he could see it again.
It's not that funny, Reagan.
Yeah. Jeez.
He would go on to mention Back to the Future in his 1986 State of the Union address by saying, as they said in the film Back to the Future, where we're going, we don't need roads.
Yeah, because he totally divested infrastructure in this country. Thanks, Reagan.
So one of the AFI criteria that Christina mentioned in her speech was how it's still relevant today. Michael J. Fox has said that strangers always call him McFly constantly still. And his most remarkable instance of this was when he was in a remote jungle in a South Asian country called Bhutan, located between China and India. A group of Buddhist monks passed by him, and one of them looked at Fox and said, Marty McFly! Also, the actor who plays Biff gets asked still so constantly about it that he hands out a postcard that has all the answers to questions that fans ask him. We can post a copy of this postcard onto the Facebook page.
Sure, because he does nothing else.
Actually, I read the whole thing, and he answers all the questions, and then at the end he's like, but now I'm pursuing my music, and you can find it at.
Oh, nice.
So, and my final fact for you guys today, although it wasn't in the theatrical release, the cliffhanger, to be continued, was added to the VHS release. Although it was intended as one final joke, it was not meant to be promoting sequels. In fact, the writer said if they wanted to do a sequel, they wouldn't have included the girlfriend in the car.
Right, because they recast her in the second film.
Yeah, and she's like unconscious like the whole beginning.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, they wouldn't have put her. There was no plans of a sequel. They just put the to be continued as a joke. There would be two other sequels to this film, released in 1989 and 1990.
That was BAM.
Time for Sam. Sam, that was a great segment.
Thank you so much. Now we're going to go to a new segment we call Critics Corner, where the critics tell us what they think about the film.
And it was very highly rated, both by audience and critics. Zemeckis and Gale have given the movie a core of feeling that make real claims on us. For all its comedy, Back to the Future is about a kid coming to terms with his parents' inadequacies, a moment familiar to everyone, in the fulcrum in growing up, says Paul Attanasio from the Washington Post.
So this next one's an Amazon reviewer, and I think they're going to bring up some good points. Lots of foul language, and also quite a bit of sexual hints. Promotes sleeping together in high school and lots of blasphemy. God, Jesus Christ. All this, even within the first 5 to 10 of the beginning, was very disappointed. Thought this was an older movie with some values. Boy, was I wrong. Went in garbage. Definitely won't buy the rest in the series. So that's pretty harsh, isn't it?
His name was Review. I wasn't just...
That's funny.
This fusion of sci-fi, action, romance, and comedy could have been a dreadful mess were it not for writer-director Robert Zemeckis and co-writer Bob Gale's refusal to let loose line or idea escape their pen, says Mark Monahan of the Daily Telegraph.
Nice. Here's some Colonel for an Amazon reviewer. It would probably be okay if you have a low IQ.
Colonel, right behind you.
Colonel, yeah. I want a bit more than that.
It isn't often that extremely clever movie makers use their brains in the service of pure fun, but that's just what the people who make Back to the Future have done. This brilliant contraption of film could become the hit of the summer. Oh boy. Jay Boyer of Orlando Sentinel, you were right. I couldn't decide between these last two.
We'll do them both. So this one is from an Amazon customer. screw the system. I love this movie, but I'm only giving it 1 star to prove a point.
Michael is shouting because it's all caps.
Oh, yeah, of course. I respect the material. Go ahead with the last one.
I watched this movie based on media obsession that it's been 25 years since its release. After watching, I was disappointed by the shallow depiction of the human condition. Oh, says this Amazon user.
What the hell?
Okay. All right. Now we go to another fan favorite segment. Favorite part, least favorite
Clean,
part.
What's your favorite part? What's your least favorite part?
Okay. So this movie, you can nitpick it to death on some silly, outdated 80s stuff or kind of some plot stuff that's a little too contrived. But it's so much fun, I don't care. Except for the idea. The really big idea in this movie is that everything in Marty McFly's life is terrible and his family's life is terrible because his father isn't man enough. And then
and his mother isn't thin.
Right. Well, she isn't thin because said father is not man enough. Everything right. that's wrong with her and their kids is because of
not him. Enough violence. In the right. Man.
So then he becomes man enough and everything is great. I don't know. Seems. Yeah. And then it seems like Lorraine is so useless.
Doc, I need to introduce toxic masculinity to my father.
Exactly.
That's a line from the movie they cut.
Also, I feel like Biff is a bit much sometimes because he's totally a rapist. And then there's a line at the end of the movie where now Biff is not a bully anymore and he's kind of a coward. He's like, oh boy. And someone says like, I can't believe you let Biff work for you. And then he goes, well, he's the reason we met. And then he and Lorraine laugh. And I'm like, he tried to rape you.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
It's so weird.
What about the part where Marty McFly's original plan is to sexually assault his own mother?
Why is she going to get angry with you? Well, because, George, nice girls get angry when guys take advantage of them.
And then George is going to save her from that?
So I think the idea was he thought his mom was so uptight that he was just going to propose, like, having sex. And she would be so offended that George would come in and punch him out for being so forward. So then it was messed up that she actually was super forward.
Well, that's less bad.
Yeah.
Can I do my least favorite part?
You may.
I just think the 50s suck. You know? There's such a lame time period. I think it'd be fun to have a Back to the Future today that goes back to the 80s and they're like, oh, Walkmans, you know, or whatever they do. Oh, Transformers.
Well, I do think I didn't complain about this because it would be a whole other thing, but it does kind of rely on this fucking Reagan era 50s nostalgia that's so gross and toxic if you think about it too much. Like, oh, back in the day when men were men and women were women. And,
yeah, it's stupid. I hate it.
But then they. And they even kind of make a point that, oh, yeah, people used to be racist back then, but they didn't really go into that too much, which is fine. It's not the movie for it. Okay. It's like, isn't it great that this guy, who the black guy, is going to become mayor of your horrible, dilapidated town because the 80s is terrible?
Yeah, I'm just saying, if you have a time traveling movie, what's a worse time period than the 50s? I feel like any other time period is more interesting because it'd be more disconnected. Or it would be...
Oh, that's interesting.
Or it'd be sooner, it'd be the 60s or 70s and things are more fun.
So... Again, I do just think this was banking on the 80s being really, really into 50s nostalgia particularly. Like, that's when 50s diners were such a big thing.
So that's what I don't like, is the 50s nostalgia is in the 80s.
That's okay.
Hate it.
That's a pretty tame complaint, I think.
Well, you already took my other one, which is just like the lesson of you have to be a bully to win in life.
What's your favorite part?
Come on. It's gotta be Doc Brown. It's gotta be, what's his name?
Christopher Lloyd.
Christopher Lloyd.
So he brings good.
I watched this YouTube video of like, what's a really good way to get exposition out through the film? And they talked about all these like ways you can kind of stealth it in. And their final bit was like, or you could just have Christopher Lloyd just sort of dish it out because he's just fun. And that was it.
I was actually thinking that like there's so many contrived line readings where it's like, wow, what a bunch of specific information that's going to come around later. but I do feel like it was more convincing when Christopher Lloyd did it for some reason.
And I like the setup where it's like, you know, a kid and his neighbor is this mad scientist. Was that like a genre of movie in back in the day?
No, that was very specific to this movie. And because, then there are other things
because
like
they didn't even introduce it. They're
at
like,
all.
It's just like, obviously it's established that my best friend is a mad scientist, old man. And
that's fine.
Doesn't need any explaining. We never go into it.
It's so funny you say that because like never in all of my years watching this movie did I ever question it until I was an adult.
But like, it's such a cool thing. If I was a kid, I'd be like, oh, my best friend is a mad scientist. I'll pretend. But it just seems like there could have been, I mean, there's like Rick
could have been
and
one line of dialogue as to why.
No. I mean, that could have spawned a whole genre.
Oh, sure. Like a Rick and Morty situation.
But like, many more in that time period.
I think I read that there was a whole backstory to it originally, and they even explained, well, how Doc has all this money, and but then they just cut it out.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Totally. So my favorite thing is it's an insane premise, and it's kind of problematic and kind of silly, but it's so enjoyable. I remember you watched it first, and we saw each other, and you're like, I don't like it as much as I remember. So I went into it, and I'm like, all right, this is going to be trashy or weird, and I just loved watching it. It's so fun.
That wasn't my complaint. I said I disliked it more than I thought I would, and I liked it more than I thought I would.
Oh, yeah, which is a weird thing.
Because actually, there's a lot of shots in this that are weirdly good. That didn't need to be that good. One instance is Marty goes up, he's in docks, he's sort of fooling around with all the equipment, he's playing guitar. And I just really like the shot where he's like at this big amp and he's turning the dial. And then as the camera sort of pans out, he walks over and then the camera slowly reveals like the much bigger speaker and he's standing in front of it. And it's like just really well framed. There's the shot where he's looking at his dad and his head sort of pokes around his head.
Yeah.
It's just sort of framed cool. There's a lot of just really interesting shots in the film.
There was not one moment that I was bored. I was always entertained. Even when you know what's going to happen, you're like, oh my gosh. Like the tension building was really good. The action shots were so fun. I just really liked it.
But I don't like the 50s. So I just don't like the main set of this movie.
I also really like Huey Lewis in the News.
That's a good song.
Two songs.
What's
Power
that song?
Love and Back in Time.
What's that song?
Back in Time. I'll be back in
time. I don't remember that
There's
one.
There's more.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to our next segment, which is the intern summary of the film. We open meeting Marty McFly.
Which, did we not talk about what a great name that is? I love
That's a great name.
I love that there's a scene where the principal's like, no McFly has ever amounted to anything. And I'm like, how does a guy named McFly not just be insanely successful and cool?
I love that speech because he starts kind of reasonable. He's like, you're late to school. This is not good.
And you're like, yeah.
And he goes, also, your band sucks. We're like, whoa.
Your band sucks. Your father's terrible. You have a legacy of failure.
Dude, I'm 10 minutes late. Calm down. Okay, we open at Marty McFly. Clocks everywhere. He's at his friend's, Dr. Emmett Brown's house, and totally blows up the audio equipment because he's playing guitar.
Which he calls, he's like, oh, by the way, you shouldn't plug in the amp. And he's like, okay. And he just totally trashed his house and didn't tell him. He's going to figure it out, man.
Yeah, friendship. Then he's late for school, so we get to see his sweet skateboarding. Oh,
again, I cannot get over this idea of a super serious actor playing Marty McFly. Because he's like, all of my clocks are exactly 20 minutes late. He's like, Doc, are you telling me it's 8:30? I'm late for school. Imagine a serious line reading of that.
This is not a life jacket. Now I'm trying to do like the Batman voice for all of his lines. Then he's late for school, so we get to see Squeeze skateboarding. We learn he has dreams of being a rock star, but his band gets rejected by Huey Lewis himself. Also has a super supportive girlfriend, Jennifer.
Unfortunately, his family is a mess. His mom is a sad alcoholic who likes to tell detail-heavy stories of the past. When she tells the story of meeting his dad, and just like, and he took me to the under-the-sea dance, and I think there was a storm that night, real nasty one, and he kissed me on the moonlight while we were listening to this one song. Okay, this seems important.
You know, I've seen this movie a bunch, but like, I still don't even register that it's supposed to be sad. You know what I mean? Like these are just normal families.
Okay, I think I didn't when I was younger, but this time I know, especially because they do the bit about her brother being in prison and she goes, we all make mistakes, and then she pours herself a drink.
But it's just like, not everyone has the idyllic life. Like,
that's true.
People are sad sometimes and it's fine.
That's true. His dad is a total wimp who lets himself be bullied by his boss, Biff. His sister and brother are also lame. Which, yeah, his brother works at fast food, but then if his dad is a masculine man, he will suddenly wear a suit to the office?
You stick to those 50s ideals, yeah. But back with Doc Brown, he asks Marty to meet with him at Twin Pines Mall to show him his latest invention, a working time machine made out of a DeLorean. You made a time machine out of a DeLorean? it runs on plutonium that he stole from a bunch of Libyan nationalists.
Don't even go down that road as to how you could get plutonium if you're a terrorist cell. And like, if you already have plutonium, why would you just get one mad scientist in a small town in California to build it? Just don't, guys.
I thought you were going to say, don't go down the racism hole.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what the Libya situation, like Gaddafi was just in power in the 80s. So like, it's plausible, I guess, that he would be going after a nuclear bomb?
You went down the hall. Okay. Is it your line next? Yeah.
Except that the Libyans show up. Oh, no. They shoot Doc, apparently to death, and then go after Marty, who escapes in the DeLorean to 1955.
I love how cute the movie is, where we're like, oh, okay, so he's going to drive, and he's going to go way too fast, and he's going to go back in time. But he's like, I'm almost 80. Oh, I'm slowing down. I'm going 80. No, I'm slowing down. And then he goes over 88.
I think that's just how a stick shift would work.
No, but I mean the camera like specifically frames like it's going almost to 88.
Oh,
but then
yeah.
He like slows down.
Yeah, I love how tense and adorable that scene is. And again, you're totally right about the expositional dialogue in that scene where he's like, so here's how it would work. There's the flux capacitor.
This is what makes time travel possible. The flux capacitor.
Flux capacitor?
It's taken me almost 30 years of my entire family fortune to realize the vision of that day. My God, has it been that long?
But it's still some of the best part of the movie because he's just Christopher Lloyd is great.
So great. Yeah. What am I saying? Oh, so he's in 1955 and suddenly the town is different. The people are different. Heck, you can't even get a Pepsi free. You want a Pepsi, pal, you're going to pay for it. I just love that so much. And I mean, the idea that Michael J. Fox is so dense that he doesn't understand that reruns wouldn't be a thing and that Pepsi free wouldn't be a thing. Come on, dummy. And apparently Pepsi free is just caffeine free Pepsi.
Oh, interesting.
Which was weirdly very popular in the mid 80s and then kind of wasn't anymore.
Yeah, we still had that. We had
it. We still have it, but it was like actually popular enough that you would go.
And
to
they call it caffeine free.
Right.
They're not pretentious.
But also you don't go to most restaurants and order a caffeine free
Pepsi.
That's
very, very true. Yeah, you're right.
At the diner, he meets Biff, still an asshole, and his father, George McFly. God, what a great name. Same wimp as always.
Oh, yeah, this is a bad part. He follows George, who is a peeping. He's peeping on a lady.
Yeah, it's sort of a 1980s ethos that peeping was just what, like, lovable nerds did, and it's fine, I guess.
Yeah, which is looking at women private, which is not good.
Not great.
George falls out of a tree, and Marty saves him and passes out. He wakes up to find his mom, young and hot, really into him, calling him Calvin Klein. He's got to get out of there.
Yeah, I think he was a little too focused on his mom's weight. Like, did you feel like her character was so overweight?
No, not at all.
I didn't think so. I thought that was so weird that he kept bringing that up.
I mean, isn't everybody thinner when they're younger anyway?
Right? But then when like her husband's thing? A real man, she keeps the weight off, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Don't think about it. He goes to
Wait. We're skipping over maybe my favorite line in the entire film where Marty McFly goes, oh, I live over on John F. Kennedy Drive. And the father goes, who the hell is John F. Kennedy? Like when you hear a street, like Martin Street, like, well, I don't know that person. Well, that what does that have to do with the street? Right. A street can be called anything.
Right. If someone said, I live on Robert Lexington Road, you'd be like, who the hell is
well,
that?
I don't even know who that is. That can't be a street. I did read an article. There's like 5 reasons why that's bad. People actually did know who he was back in that time.
Like, he was a senator.
Yeah. Best line in the movie. Easily.
Okay, so he goes to find his buddy Doc Brown, which, oh my god, Michael, you know what, I underplayed Christopher Lloyd's performance because we meet young Doc Brown, he grabs, he's like, I'm gonna read your mind, and he's like no, I'm from the future. He's like,
do you know what this means? It means that this damn thing doesn't work at all.
Doc is skeptical of Future Boy, as he calls him.
I hope when they remake this movie, they get Nicolas Cage to do it. I think
that would be a little too intense, man.
Yeah, I would love it.
Imagine Nicolas Cage as a mad scientist who's friends with a teenage boy with no explanation.
I kind of feel like that's who he is in real life, you know? I probably wouldn't even be acting.
Right, but is that okay?
No, I'd want to watch it.
Fair.
You know,
fair.
Tony Soprano isn't okay. You
know? So he's skeptical of Future Boy. Oh, Ronald Reagan, the actor? That super hilarious joke that Ronald Reagan loves so much?
Yeah, it's very funny.
But Marty recalls the story that Doc told him about coming up with a flux capacitor, which makes time travel possible. And you're actually the best line in the film, maybe, is when he goes, engine running, flux capacitor, fluxing.
That's a good line.
Doc is on board, but there's a problem. Where to get the plutonium to make the DeLorean run? I know in 1985, you probably have plutonium on every shelf.
Because they need a specific gigawatt of power.
Which I looked online to see if gigawatts are real, and everyone just thinks it's a mispronunciation of gigawatt.
Actually, fun fact about that, before this time period, it was undetermined how it was pronounced. So some people pronounced it one way, and some people pronounced it the other way, until it was determined that that's the actual pronunciation.
So nice. GIF-JIF situation.
Exactly.
Doc and Marty come up with the inspired idea to use the energy from a bolt of lightning that they know is coming to power the DeLorean. That know is coming to power the DeLorean back to Marty's present.
Now, this is an example of like the worst kind of expositional earlier on, where there's a flyer, save the broken clock tower, where the lightning struck at this exact time on this exact date, and it's all here right on this flyer that I just happened to save from earlier.
And they're really content on like, well, they know it happens at that exact time.
Second.
Yeah, but like, why would they know the second? They would know the minute if it was like right at noon, but they wouldn't know if it was like 2 seconds later.
I think on the flyer, it says, as the clock struck this time, exactly. The lightning struck. So like they knew it like as that bell was dinging.
Just
in that
saying,
second.
It seems fake.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
It seems a little too convenient.
In the week leading up to the event, Marty does his best to convince his father, George, to take his mother, Lorraine, to the Enchantment Under the Sea dance because he screwed up the timeline, including dressing up as an alien to appeal to George's sci-fi fandom.
Which, yeah, and then he says Vulcan and Darth Vader, and it's very fun because we still get those references.
We still get them.
I this is a lame aside, but I do further appreciate in that last Avengers movie where they're like, what about the time continuum? And they're like, don't worry about it.
It's like, oh, geez. don't be a nerd.
When George finally gets in there, Biff gets in the way. Marty somehow ends up getting chased by Biff and his goons, which of course leads to a skateboard chase. Mm-hmm. And then they run into a manure truck and he goes, oh, shit.
Yeah, that's good.
In the end, Marty is going to tick Lorraine. The idea is to have Marty tick Lorraine off, then have George step in and be the hero, because that is the only thing Lorraine responds to. Taking care of sick people and violence.
Yes, love. Those are great things. Before they get to the dance, Marty tries his damnedest to warn Doc about the Libyan attack. But Doc won't hear it. Can't interfere with the future, you see. He writes him a letter and sneaks it into his coat.
The dance, after Lorraine throws herself on Marty and says, it's like kissing her brother, Biff and his crew throw a wrench in things by having Marty thrown into the trunk of a car. And also, Biff's trying to rape Lorraine.
Yeah,
it's
a rape thing.
Which means that George actually has to beat the stuffing out of a guy twice his size in order to win Lorraine's heart. That's all you had to do, George. Jeez.
Nice. You did it.
George clocks Biff and then gets lucky that Lorraine is incredibly attracted to shows of violence.
So hot.
Also, a band member hurt his hand, so Marty has to invent rock and roll. Which is just phenomenal. And then they have a singer dub Michael J. Fox's voice that doesn't sound anything like him.
I thought it was pretty similar.
You did?
I mean, I bought it.
You bought it?
I'm like, oh, it's him. Sure.
It's not him, Michael.
Well, way to ruin the movie magic.
Sorry.
Okay, time to return to 1985. After a few snafus, the lightning trick works and Marty is home at last. Doc ended up tearing the letter that warned of his fate, but don't worry, he taped it back together and Doc prepared himself by donning a bulletproof vest.
Yay, which was so fun because he's like, Doc, what about the space-time continuum? And he's like,
What the hell? Oh, yeah.
Things are different now, but in a good way. George is a together successful guy instead of the brown nose he was in old 1985. Lorraine is no longer an alcoholic. Because again, it was just because her husband wasn't man enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Biff is now completely under George's thumb and not in prison where he should be.
Where he should be. Yeah, because he's not good.
And even Marty's house is way less depressing.
Unfortunately, Doc shows up at the last minute and tells Marty and Jennifer that there's something wrong with their kids in the future. So they have to go back. To the future!
Yay! We're going, we don't need roads.
Ooh, that's from the film. Let's call our brother John in a segment that we call Brocall.
Brocall.
Hello, John. We're talking about Back to the Future. Have you seen it? What do you think about it?
I have seen it. I've seen it multiple times, including recently. I thought I enjoyed it. I thought I really liked it. And then when I watched it recently, I liked it a lot less than I thought.
And why is that?
Well, first of all, it's a Spielberg movie, so you expect a certain level of polish from Spielberg movies. And I have to say, when you think about that movie for like 5 seconds, it's sloppy.
Why do you think that? Why do I disagree with that?
The thing that really sticks out of my mind is because they kept suggesting that Marty is going to disappear at some point because of something he did in the past.
Yeah, that's the ticking time bomb, yeah.
And there's the scene where he's doing the guitar and he starts disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly, his parents do something. And then he's not disappearing. He didn't have any agency in that.
Yeah, no, not really.
So, I mean, it's a problem with time travel movies that you got to be really sharp, and that movie is not sharp. And that's
John, it's so campy, though. You're overthinking it, man.
It might be, but other Spielberg movies are much more logical and much more put together. So that I really give it a heavy demerit for that. Also, and Michelle agrees wholeheartedly with me on this, movies that use a rape as a major plot point, not so great.
I mean, sure.
Yeah, that agreed.
No, well, hard pass.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. That was a pretty bad part.
I think one definite thing that complaints, you know, I guess positive yet negative, Doc Brown needed to be in that movie like 500%.
He's the best part,
the best
easily.
Thing going in that whole movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Christopher Lloyd, great.
He was just absent. I mean, sure, I get it. Marty's the main character in his story. No, I want more Doc Brown.
By the way, Spielberg did not direct this film, John.
What'd you say?
Spielberg did not direct this film.
He didn't?
No.
He
produced it.
Yeah, he produced it.
All right, well, see, look at that. Giving Spielberg a pass now.
All right, good.
I'm still knocking it for the lack of continuity. Michelle is yelling at me in the other room to say, Billy Zane's so good.
What? When is Billy Zane in the movie?
Oh, isn't he
Billy
one of the
Zane
henchmen?
Is one is the part of the gang.
Oh.
I totally missed that.
That's funny.
Yeah, totally Billy Zane, because we looked it up after we watched it.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I think I had more, but yeah, that's good.
Okay, so what do you grade it?
I think I'm going to give it, being honest here, I'm going to give it a C+. All
that's right. Low. Very fair.
Yeah.
Very
fair. If you would have asked me before I saw it again, I would say B+, A-. No, I didn't care about it that much. Yeah, you kept expecting the family characters to come back, and I didn't like them that much.
No.
Which was a whole main part of the plot, which, yeah, didn't care for it.
There's a lot to dislike.
I just want Doc Brown. I want more Doc Brown.
There should have been. He should have been the main character.
Should have been the main character, and that was a huge missed opportunity.
You know, it might be a Johnny Depp in the Pirates scenario, where once you make him the main character, he's better as a sidekick, funny guy.
Oh, good point, Michael. I like that.
Possible.
Anyway.
But then it wouldn't change my grade, because I would still not like it then, because you gave me too much of a good thing.
Yeah.
So, C+, I stand by it.
All right. Thanks so much, John.
Bye.
Talk later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Colleen, what do you grade this Back to the Future movie?
I'm going to give it an A-. Just because I feel like, again, the main theme of the masculinity stuff is pretty bad, but
it's such a big part of the film.
It's a big part of the film, but I liked it so much. And I also agree with Tina and Matt that, like, of course this should have been on the AFI, because it's such a big cultural phenomenon. If you say to someone, get in the DeLorean, they know exactly what you mean. That is huge.
That doesn't register with me at all.
I know it doesn't. But I just also really, really enjoyed it. So
I'll give it a C+. I mean,
wow.
C+ is like fine. Like,
sure.
I like C+ movies. But again, I fucking hate the 50s. I don't like being in that zone.
Okay.
It's not fun. And I don't like the main crux of the character development.
Okay.
Which is, these are pretty substantial elements of the film. But it also does other things right.
Who are we sponsored by this week?
We're sponsored by Velveeta.
Ooh, if you're like, I want some cheese, but not really.
That's pretty good. I mean, what's cheese?
Yeah, good point,
you know what I mean? It's sort of a broad category. It's more of an abstract idea.
That's a terrible thing for Wisconsinite to say.
Anyway, that was a great spot we did.
So next week we will be taking off for Thanksgiving.
Is that true?
Yep.
Oh.
So stay tuned. For where we haven't got off the air, stay tuned for the following week, where we will do, what is it going to be? We're going to randomly choose. It's Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And,
good.
And that was Flaherty's on Films.
Yes. Join us next time for that and cut.